you're supposed to earn it, or what to do with it, or how to keep it. You're a freak with a dark, shameful secret. But you're not the only one. Keep your hidden financial fears with a blast of sun. Now your healing has begun. It's bad with money with
Gabe S.
Dunn.
Hello and welcome to Bad with Money, a show about finances and feelings where we don't talk down to you. Today, it's Canada, baby. Our guest is Jessica Morehouse, a sought-after money expert, accredited financial counselor, Canada, speaker, media personality, and host of the popular More Money podcast. Hello, Jessica. Where in Canada are you coming to us from?
Toronto.
Hey. My BFF goes there all the time because that's where her girlfriend lives.
Oh, dope. Yeah. Well, it's a decent city. I'm originally from Vancouver, so I always like to give a shout out to Vancouver, but Toronto's great. I've been here 10 years now.
Oh, you crossed the country.
Oh, yeah. And like literally me and my husband drove from Vancouver to Toronto and like sold all our stuff and had no jobs. And we're like, let's see if we can make it in Toronto. And yeah, so far so good.
Wow. I love. Okay. Yeah. So I wanted to start with that. There's a little bit in your bio about your journey, but I wanted to cut that so that I could hear it from you. So like, how did everything start for you money-wise?
Yeah. So, I mean, it really started, I think, after I graduated university. So I went to university in Vancouver called Simon Fraser University and went to did a film degree, super employable, and graduated in 2009 and could not for the life of me find a job and have this useless fine arts degree. And so I kind of, you know, worked a couple of different jobs in marketing until me and my husband going to get married. And we were just kind of like stagnating, we felt like, in Vancouver, and he works in music. And so we were thinking of, you know, doing something different and staying in Canada. You've got some limited options in terms of, you know, bigger cities. And so we decided on Toronto and, yeah, just took the biggest risk of our lives. At the time, too, when you look back, you're like, oh, yeah, that was a good time to go, because we were like, I think, 27, 28. So, and just starting our careers. And at that time, I had also, in my free time, started a blog about personal finance and was kind of just self-educating and stuff like that. And when we got here, and I started doing some freelance writing and stuff like that. And so when we got here, I was still trying to figure out, what do I want to do? And again, floated around a few different jobs. And eventually, after, you know, being frustrated with a bunch of jobs that just, like, you know, trying to climb that corporate ladder just wasn't working out, I'm like, maybe the thing that I'm doing on my, you know, on the side, my free time, the financial, you know, at that time I also had a podcast, maybe I should try to make that my thing. And so I've been now running my own financial education business for over 7 years. I'm working on a book right now. And it seems obvious now that I should have been doing this the whole time, but it took me a long time to figure that out.
Why were you interested in finance?
I think I've always kind of been intrigued, just because I came from a family where money was always tight. And I'm like, I you know, and you're always kind of looking at your neighbors, your friends. You're like, why do they have more? Man, would my life be better if I had more? And so when I, you know, kind of got into the real world and started working and seeing my friends maybe earn higher incomes than me and spend money differently, I really wanted to figure out, how can I not be a broke student anymore? And so I, you know, read books, started, you know, discovering blogs, started my own blog. And it was so fascinating that people were talking about money and their income and their spending habits so openly. And then also we're talking about how, you know, it doesn't matter where you start, you can end up where you want to end up if you, you know, just practice some really smart, you know, strategies and just like learn this stuff for yourself. And so that was really empowering and exciting to me, because I'm like, oh, I always figured I'd always be in this spot where, you know, there's just enough, but don't expect anything more. And so that's what was kind of exciting to me, to like, oh, you mean I could retire early, I could buy a home one day, I could achieve these things if I just kind of instill some of these best practices.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you're an accredited financial counselor, Canada. So what is that? Yeah. What does that mean in Canada?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's an American version, and that's kind of actually how I found out about the Canadian program. They're pretty similar, I think, just, you know, Canadian versus American. But it's a program where, you know, I really liked it. And I'm also on my path to become a CFP as well now. But it was really great because it focused more on just like the foundational things that people need to know, and especially high focus on like credit and debt, which is usually people's biggest struggle with money. But also it had like that counseling side where, you know, there's a whole section on how to talk to people and how to, you know, walk people through kind of the more psychological aspects of it, instead of just like, advice you hear all the time, like, you know, don't buy avocado toast and, you know, debt is bad, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, well, it's deeper than that, though. It's more complex than that. And so that's what really drew me in. I'm like, ooh, that's great. And then after doing that program, like, I want to continue learning more. Hence is why I'm doing this new path and, you know, writing a book that's more focused on the psychology of things and trauma and just all these influences. Because, yeah, the more I learn about money, the more I realize it's the problem is bigger than what we think it is. So that's, yeah, I'm never getting bored with money. And I've been doing this for 11, 12 years now.
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing this podcast since 2016, and I definitely have had backwards and forwards, like, you know, very much, okay, I'm not doing so well. Okay, I am doing well. Okay, I'm not doing so well. Yeah. Especially like now there's like a strike and a bunch of other things are happening at once in my industry. So
yeah,
it's just like a total mess. But so you mentioned best practices. So what are like some of the beginning ones that you tell people?
So first off, totally understand the strike. Apparently my uncle, who lives up in Vancouver, works in the industry and he's not working, same with his wife. So yeah, that sucks. I'm so sorry. That's still okay. Going on, man. I hope it gets better and it gets resolved. But in terms of the best practices, I mean, really, I like to think of, because when people come to me, typically they're feeling overwhelmed. They feel really shameful, like they don't want to talk about it. You just feel all of the bad feelings, but you know you need to get started. And so really, it's about first kind of unlocking, why do we feel so bad? And how can we kind of overcome some of those things before we get to the practical side? Because if you're just going to tell someone, start a budget, you know, they're going to roll their eyes. They're like, yeah, I did. And it still didn't work, right? It's not that most people don't know this stuff or haven't tried. They've tried and it didn't work. And we need to figure out, why is doing a simple budget, which is really helpful, why is that not working for you? And it could be a number of reasons. It could be you made it too complicated and there's too many annual tasks, because there's so many different ways you can budget. You could do it by hand. You could do it on a spreadsheet. So maybe you need to find what's the best version for you. Maybe it's making your own version. But really, I think sometimes it's about like, okay, before we get to the how-to practical stuff, let's kind of go into the deeper stuff a little bit. And so when I do work with one-on-one clients, we kind of start talking about like, tell me a little bit about yourself, your background, your family. How did money play a role in your life? How do you feel about money? Usually it's never a good feeling. Usually it's like, well, I wish I had more of it. If I had more of it, I'd be XYZ happier and, you know, more fulfilled and all this kind of stuff. And so really taking a look at, what's your relationship with money look like now? What do you want it to look like in the future? And then we can start kind of piecing together, okay, how can we use money as a tool to get to where you want to be in life? And where do you want to be in life? What does that look like? A lot of people are just thinking about the here and now, and they're, you know, and I get it, depending on your situation. You're like, I just need to pay my rent, you know, or I'm not earning anything and I'm freaking out. And so like, okay, let's just focus on that. We don't have the capacity to think about future goals, retirement. No, that's too overwhelming. Let's focus on, how can we earn a little bit of extra income? Because maybe you're on strike. What can we do to kind of bridge that gap so you can have some breathing room? And then slowly you can kind of add on and add on so you can kind of get to that next level.
So let's talk about Canada. So what are the differences that you have noticed, or that if you consume a lot of content about money, I assume like you're running into largely US centric stuff. So is there stuff that you run into that you're like, what? And like, what is the Canadian, you know, we just had Mr. Money Jar on and we talked about like the Royal Bank of England and the English stock market and stuff. So like, what's the deal in Canada?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of similarities between Canada and the US because we are so closely linked. But and so and we do get a lot of American content. That's why a lot of people come to me who are Canadian. They're like, this is great. But then they started talking about 401ks and we don't have that in Canada. And so there are lots of differences, right? And so I'd say, like, just kind of broadly, the biggest differences come with how our financial system is regulated and organized, our tax rules, and then our products. Those are kind of like the main things. But lots of the big things, like the how-tos, like, you know, make sure you're being smart with debt and things like that, that's all pretty much the same. But it's really like when you get to the particulars, that's when things work differently. So like an example, I only just recently discovered this about the US. So you can get a mortgage and lock in a 30-year interest rate with a mortgage. You cannot do that in Canada. We have terms that are much shorter, which actually makes more logical sense. I'm almost like, I don't know how your system works where you can lock in 2% for 30 years. Like, that's crazy. And I mean, if we had that, everyone would lock in at the lowest interest rate possible, right? But here, you, if you want to get a mortgage, and we have variable and fixed rates, but if you got a fixed rate, so it stays the same for that term, your options in terms of a term could be, it could be 1, 2, 3, and 5 years. Okay. You can't do longer than a 5 year. And that's because the, you know, they know that interest rates are going to fluctuate. They're going to go up and down. The bank is going to lose money if they know interest rates are going to be 5% in the future. If you lock in at 2%, they're losing money. And so you, so it's a bit different with that, because I remember I was talking to someone who had a bunch of rental properties. I'm like, oh my gosh, are you worried about interest rates going up? They're like, no. I'm like, okay, well, I mean, you're going to have to renew after a couple of years. And oh, I didn't realize they probably locked in for like 30 years. So that's like a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on if you can get, that. But yeah, that is interesting, because you usually hear about there being so much more of a housing crisis in the US. But I think,
oh, there's a housing crisis here.
Canada is having a very big housing crisis. Yeah, extremely big housing crisis. No matter what our day looks like, we need nourishment that fuels us. Kachava's whole body meal shakes will keep your body and mind nourished all day. The Kachava new strawberry flavor is bursting with real strawberry and benefits. Plus, the matcha just fuels me with a flavor that I would already be getting. One thing that I like to do to incorporate Kachava into my daily routine is I add peanut butter and a little bit of iced coffee, and it helps me stay energized, focused, and calm. It's basically a way that I can grab a breakfast on the go. And it's super easy to make a superfood-packed shake with Kachava. All the good stuff your mind and body crave for whole body health. With every 2 scoops of Kachava, you get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Non-GMO, no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. Rethink your definition of fast food. It mixes into a smooth and creamy shake, whether you use a shaker bottle or a blender, and it's a comprehensive all-in-one meal. Think protein shake, meal replacement, greens and veggies, essential vitamins and minerals, and so much more. You've never tasted strawberry like this. Go to kachava.com and use code BADMONEY for 15% off your order. That's Kachava, KACHAVA.com, code BADMONEY for 15% off.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Yeah, our interest rates are high, and we're actually getting an announcement from our Bank of Canada. So that's our central bank that is possibly going to raise interest rates again tomorrow. And people are freaking out. So we'll see what happens on September 6th. So that's a big deal. But yeah, also, I mean, even just like real estate is very different here. I mean, not that I'm a real estate expert, but in terms of just cost of living and cost of owning, it's because just, you know, we've got a lot of land, but a lot of it's just ice or forest or something. You know, it's like you look at the map, you're like, oh, you know, how is it so different than America? It's like, it's just a different landscape. And so it's expensive to buy a home. Like in Toronto, I know sometimes I compare the price of a home in LA to Toronto. I'm like, they're the same price, but you can get a mansion in LA, whereas you can get like a bungalow here.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah. What would, because the houses in LA, like the ones that I run across are like 1 mil, 2 mil, like it's wild.
Yeah, I live in Toronto, and houses that are just like a one, like maybe 2, maybe 3 bedroom bungalow. So like a, you know, one level house, 1.5 mil.
Easy. Right.
Yeah. And you're like, cool. And it's like owned by some old lady who's lived there for 50 years and never renovated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really wild. Wait, yeah. So you don't have 401ks? What do you have?
So for our investment accounts, we've got a number of different, we call them registered accounts or unregistered. Registered means they're registered with our government. They offer some special tax efficiencies. And so the main two we have are the RRSP, Registered Retirement Savings Plan. So I think that's close to your 401k, except it's not specifically tied to an employer. Mm. So, and that's where, this is where like we get into the weeds a little bit. It's like, but we do have a thing called the group RRSP that is offered by an employer. Not all employers have to, but it's kind of like a pension. And we do also have pensions, like defined benefit, defined contribution pensions that are offered by employers. But you can have an RSP on your own. You can open it up with your bank, your financial institution, just do whatever you want and put cash in there, your investments in there, whatever. But they're not specifically have to be tied to an employer. And then we also have our TFSA, our tax-free savings account. I think that might be close to your Roth IRA, where it's how the tax implications are that you put in after-tax dollars, so you don't get a tax deduction. Like with your RRSP, you put in pre-tax dollars, you get a tax deduction. Your TFSA, you don't, but the money in there grows tax-free. So whenever you want to take it out, you don't pay any tax. So that's kind of a really great thing about the TFSA.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
And then we have a new one, just to make things confusing, a new one that I learned a lot about because it's just like, great, let's make another account, make it really confusing for people, called the FHSA. It's a first home savings account. However, there's a lot of rules that you can use this account and it's similar to an RSP and you don't necessarily have to use it to buy a home. You can actually just use it as another retirement account.
Oh.
The government was trying to be like, hey, we're going to make housing more affordable by creating this new account. And if you're a first home, so if you've never owned a home, you can utilize this account and you can put in money and it can grow tax-free as long as you don't, you know, withdraw it. And then you get a tax deduction. So very similar to an RRSP. But if you choose that you use the account for, I think you can have it open for 15 years and you don't want to buy a home, then you can actually move it over to your RRSP and you actually get tactically more RRSP room because we also have like certain amount of room that we get every year.
Right. Yeah. Limits.
So that just launched in April. So that's a lot of fun. People are very confused about that account because it's very new.
Love it. Yeah. There are so many like tax advantage accounts that are just spread out and you're like, okay, so this one allows for this and this one allows for this. And it's like a full-time job going through them. As you know, that's your full-time job.
Yeah.
What else is different? I know you mentioned a couple of other things. Like what else is different between Canada and the US?
I'd say definitely our different kind of comes to investing specifically are different platforms and products. So I know in the US, I mean, I remember years ago when people were talking about, you know, index funds, they were becoming more popular. In the US, I think when most people talk about index funds, they're actually talking about index mutual funds. I know exchange traded funds, ETFs are becoming more popular, but for a long time, they were actually talking about index mutual funds. In Canada, we're pretty much always talking about index ETFs. So that's one other confusing thing because people are like, how do I buy an index mutual fund? Like, technically, you can. They're not popular here and they're more expensive than an ETF. And also, that's the other big difference between Canada and the US. Because the US is so expansive, you have so many more institutions, there's more competition. Your prices are much lower on so many things, but especially like investment fees. So like some of the fees you pay are like so low compared to Canada. Canada has, for mutual funds especially, some of the highest MERs in the world. Like average is 2 to 2.5% on a mutual fund. That's crazy. Management expense ratio. So that's like the overall fee that you're paying for that fund. So if, for example, it is a percentage on your assets under management. So if you have a mutual fund and you've got $10,000 in there, the fee, the MER is 2%. No matter, let's say it earns 8%, they are going to take that 2% fee. So really your return is 6%. And in the US, you have much, like, especially for your mutual funds, much lower fees compared to Canada. So that's like a big thing. We're paying a lot more over here for certain things that you guys have over there.
Because it's a smaller, like,
I think, yeah, it's just there's more competition. And so it kind of drives the prices down on lots of those things. And two, like the other thing that I noticed a number of years ago is you guys just have, because there's more competition, there's just more people, you have a lot more technology, a lot more fintech, and it takes us a lot longer to kind of adopt some of those things. And so you guys got robo-advisors way sooner than we did. You got, you know, Robinhood, that trading app that made it very economical for people to buy their own, you know, stocks and investments. It took us a while to get something similar. Like we've always had what were called discount brokerages where you can, you know, buy and sell your own securities, but they're more like clunky and you have to be kind of savvy to know how they are. It took us a while to get like an app where you can do it really, you know, and also free of commissions. Whereas most of our, before we got like something similar, we have something called Wealthsimple Trade here and a bunch of other companies that have then kind of followed suit. But when you got Robinhood, we had nothing like that where, oh, you can buy and sell whatever you want. No commissions, no trading fees. And like, oh, we're paying like $10 per trade. So there's a lot of things you're like, oh, we see what happens in the US. Maybe 5 years later, we'll get it.
Why do we say index mutual funds and you guys are saying index ETFs? Like, why is that a difference?
Well, it's just, I think part of it was mutual funds, because they've been more affordable in the US, then there wasn't as a big push to get into ETFs. Again, ETFs are becoming much more popular in the US now. But in Canada, so we actually, in Canada, fun fact, I think in 1999, we were the first country to, or yeah, we came out with the ETF before the US. Yeah. So fun fact, Canada developed the ETF. And I think it's because they're just so much cheaper. Like, as an example, you can pay 2% on a mutual fund. You can get a comparative ETF for like 0.05% MER. And I know those percentages don't mean anything, but if you like put it into a, you know, MER calculator that exists, it could literally mean thousands of dollars you're saving just because of that fee, right? Like, or hundreds of thousands, depending on like how big your nest egg is. And so I think that could be a reason, is really just it comes down to the fees. They're just like, and they're more flexible. Like, they're so easy to buy, whereas if you want to buy a mutual fund, you have to work with a wealth management firm or a bank and talk to somebody, and it's just a whole thing. This way, you can just sign up with a discount brokerage, and then you can just buy it on your own, clickety click, and you're ready to go.
What is the Canadian? Do you guys have a Canadian stock market?
Oh, yeah. We've got the TSX. Well, we've got a lot of different exchanges, but the TSX is kind of the main one, the Toronto Stock Exchange. And so that's where you'll find kind of all of our big ones. And then there's more specific exchanges for like commodities or for like up and coming companies and things like that. But I'd say our TSX is like equivalent to your New York Stock Exchange.
What are the big companies?
Oh, gosh, I could probably look on. So the other thing, too, is, so, you know, when you hear about the term index, your mm-hmm. big indexes are like the Dow Jones, the S&P 500. Ours is the it's not very easy to remember, but the S&P TSX Composite Index. Not as sexy, but okay. It exists.
A lot of letters.
Yeah, but that's our index for like, this is what the overall Canadian stock market looks like in the big companies. And I'd say, I don't know off the top of my head what are like the top 10, but if you look, it's likely just going to be banks and utilities and gas companies. Mm-hmm. For a time, Shopify was number one, but that was more like during 2020 and the big kind of tech push, and everyone was buying tech stocks and stuff, but I don't think it's in the top 10 anymore.
Oh,
yeah.
Is Shopify a Canadian company?
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Their head office is in Ottawa. It's a Canadian company. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. So I have another question, which is, you know, I think we view Canada as this place that is more progressive or more what?
Really?
I don't know. We have we truly have the wrong idea. Well, you see, like Trump gets elected and we're all like, we're going to Canada. But it's like, you know, oh, you guys have health care, so we're going to Canada. Although I've been taught by many Canadians in my life that that is bullshit.
Yeah, it's like, it's not, I mean, you know, it's funny, Canadians are like, oh man, I'm going to move to Scandinavia. They got great healthcare there. Go to Sweden, go to Denmark.
I know. Yeah, I think there was like this buildup of Canada as being this like progressive haven for a hot second. And then a bunch
it
of Canadians
where you
were
go.
Like, yeah, no. But so how is debt taken care of in Canada? Like, are there a lot of programs and social services or... like, what's the deal over there?
So, yeah, I mean, just even speaking about like the big differences between Canada and the US with certain those things, it's, and especially talking about like progressiveness, depending, there are pockets for sure. And I'm sure like in the US, there's pockets, like I'm sure like LA, New York City, lots of those other kind of cities are like very liberal, progressive. And that's really mm-hmm. cool. In Canada, I'd say like Vancouver, like all the big cities, like Vancouver, mm-hmm. Toronto, Montreal, not to say that other cities aren't, but in general, that's where like politically you can look at the mm-hmm. elections and see like, okay, they're more left, they're more right. And stuff like that. Yeah. You know, middle of the country, the prairies are a little bit more conservative. And so depends on where you go. But in terms of like debt and stuff like that. So do you mean like consumer debt? So like if you're in consumer debt in Canada, what do you do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously you could just take care of it yourself. But in general, if you need some help, you've got kind of two main options. You can see use a nonprofit credit counseling service. And so a lot of people that become an accredited financial counselor like myself, they get that designation so they can be a credit counselor. And that's one way to kind of, you know, work with an individual, see what they can do, maybe talk to the creditors to see if you can make a plan, stuff like that. That's kind of like plan number one. But if you're in a situation where you're like, I really can't pay my debts, like even if we make a plan, it's not going to happen, then instead you'd go see what's called an insolvency trustee. And so they can either help you make a consumer proposal or go through bankruptcy. So I'm not sure how different that is from the US.
What is a consumer proposal?
So that's basically working with this agency, and then they would talk with the people who have those debts that you have to pay and then you aren't able to, your lenders. And then they would basically propose, hey, we can't pay all $50,000 that they owe. Why don't we pay you back $20,000 and we're going to make a payment plan? Is that okay? Mm. So basically you kind of negotiate, like they're negotiating on your behalf to be like, you're not going to get $50,000. It's just not going to happen. But how about you take this percent? Is that okay? And they're like, yeah, okay. And so either then they, you know, take that from your pay directly or you make a payment plan.
Are there rules for how like debt collectors are able to behave, or are there, there rules?
Technically are, but they're very predatory. I mean, I was just talking to someone. Yeah, it's the same. I was just talking to someone the other day, and it was, yeah, some debt collector. They tried calling him a bunch, and he's just like telling her, like, I just don't have the money. I can't afford this. And then they start, that's, you know, this one lender, collection agency started calling his family, his roommates, his friends.
So you're not supposed to be able to
like,
do that.
It's not actually, they shouldn't be able to do that. I'm not 100% sure if there is any law against it. So I think they're kind of just using that gray area, but no, they can be very predatory, and yeah, it's not good.
Similar to here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your bio also mentioned student loans. Is that as big of an issue in Canada? Do they forgive them? What's going on?
I know, I've been following what's been going on in the US, and it seems I'm having a hard time following what's going on, actually.
It's confusing
because it keeps on getting changed, and oh my gosh, it sounds awful. But yeah, no, it's a big, big problem. I think in general, average time it takes someone post-grad to pay off their student loans is 10 years, which is a long freaking time. Mm-hmm. And I think the average is probably between $20,000 to $30,000, if not more. It depends on, I guess, what you go to school for. But so there's a couple different ways you can get student loans in Canada. So the main way is to get provincial student loans. So we have states instead of provinces. And then there's federal student loans. And usually you get a combination of those two. You basically go through this portal, you apply, and then they approve you for a certain amount of provincial, a certain amount of federal. Now, if you're not eligible, because sometimes it's like, oh, you live at home and your parents make a lot of money, or, you know, in our eyes, a lot of money, you're not going to get approved. So when I was going to university, I only applied for a student loan my last year, but I think I tried my first year and I wasn't eligible, and my parents did not earn that money. Yeah, so I don't know why. And so I worked hard in high school, got some scholarships, and just worked throughout university. But your other option, if you aren't eligible, is you can get private loans through financial institution. And that can typically look like a student line of credit.
Okay. Pretty similar to here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But the really good thing here in Canada that just started because of the pandemic is, at least for federal student loans, they no longer, once you finish school, you do not have to pay any interest on the loan. So when you're paying it back, you're just paying principal. I don't know how long that's going to last. I'm sure at a certain point, especially if we get new party in government, that may change. But right now, that's a pretty good thing for people who are finishing school.
Is that like is student loan forgiveness something that young people talk about politically a lot?
I think so. Maybe not as much as the U.S. Like, I think this, the government changing this aspect of you don't have to pay interest has appeased a lot of people.
Yeah.
But when you guys were talking a lot about the forgiveness, we started talking a lot more about it. But we've never really had student loan forgiveness. There was, I remember I had a friend who lived in New Brunswick. And so this was going back like 10 years ago when she was in school. But there was a program in the province of New Brunswick where she got a portion of her loans forgiven. But that was like specific provincial program, no longer exists, unfortunately. But in general, there's never been, I don't think, any kind of forgiveness here. But that, I think that's still in conversation, but I think a little less now because they kind of gave us a little treat, a little something to nibble on.
Wow. That's all we need is a real small little treat.
Just give us a morsel and we're like, oh, wow, you actually gave us something. That's a surprise. So just lip service.
Well, your government right now is a liberal government, no?
It is a liberal government. Yeah. Still got Trudeau up there.
Yeah.
Since he's there until, I don't know. It's, we also don't have, like, politically, we do not have the same rules where, you know, your president can only do 2 terms. We don't have that. So I think he
right,
can be there
I know.
Forever.
People get elected over and over again. Yeah.
If you keep voting him in, he could still be there. So we'll see.
Wow. Yeah. That's funny because the person I was speaking to in the UK was like, oh yeah, we change prime ministers like every 3 months. Like,
oh, right.
Jesus
well, yeah,
Christ.
They do seem to do that.
There. Yeah. I thought that was super funny. So also speaking of my interview about England is I'm so curious in different countries about class divide. Mm. So like, is there, you know, you're talking about Canada being pretty big and widespread, and some of it is farmland and some of it is sort of uninhabitable. And then there's these cities. So is there like a huge class divide, and is there a push for this sort of Canadian dream of getting out of your town and becoming wealthier? Like, how is that viewed?
I mean, I'd say probably not on the same level as the states where there's like the American dream. I mean, we have a sort of a version of that, but not, it's, I don't know. I was talking to someone about this a while ago, and it's like, I think that maybe they were an immigrant here, and they're like, it was interesting to notice that Canadians are kind of in general as a culture less ambitious than Americans. And I don't know whether that's because maybe we have less, I don't know. There's just, we're ambitious, but not like Americans who are literally just all about money, hustle. Like, this is like the view from a Canadian kind of perspective. It's like, wow, they're all about just like money, hustle, get it, get fame, da 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 da. And it's like, we have that a little bit, but it's not as realistic. Like, there's definitely a certain ceiling. Like, for instance, my husband works in music, and we talk all the time about if he wanted to reach that kind of pinnacle level in his career for what he does, honestly, you'd have to move to Nashville or LA. Like, you can't do that in Canada. There's like there's a few people in Canada and a few. I mean, like, there are quite a few people in Canada that are making it. Mm-hmm. But if you want to get to that like Grammy level or like, you know, some of those people, you're like, it's really difficult to do that from Canada. And I don't know why that is, but it is what it is. Even for me, like, I love what I do and I feel like I'm pretty successful. But then I compare myself to certain Americans that do the same thing. And like, I don't think I could ever get to that particular level if I were to stay here, but I also like it here. So it's okay. But there's a certain different, I think, mindset in terms of achievement and, you know, getting wealth and all this kind of stuff. It's not quite the same drive, I don't think, that we have. But again, that's just like what I've seen in my vibe. Other people may, you know, have different ideas of that in Canada. But
no, I think sometimes we view Canadians as quaint. Like, we're like, look at them doing their little things.
You know,
and
what?
It's also,
We're just happy doing it, though. You know, you're like,
much happier.
I mean, a lot of the research I've been doing lately is about like money and happiness. And I think we have this idea. I mean, everyone, I think globally, has this idea that more money will bring me happiness. But the data shows that is not true after a certain point, right? You get to a certain level of comfort, you're good. But then you're like, I need more, no more. And every time you get more, you're not any happier. So you have to keep on striving for more and you're just in this endless loop.
Do you have Canadian billionaires?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Who
Not
are they?
As many as you guys, but we certainly have billionaires for sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who are they?
I mean, I don't know all of them, but I'd say probably all the owners of the grocery stores. We got some big billionaires who own some grocery stores. There's
grocery stores?
Yeah, telecom companies and grocery stores. There's some families that own some of these companies and they're mega rich. Mega
I mean,
rich.
I guess it's like, I guess we have like Walmart and the Walton, like, you know, family.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we've got, I think the Loblaws family owns these grocery stores called Loblaws and a bunch of other things. They also bought this kind of, it was a pharmacy called Shoppers, and now they own that and has a bunch of other stuff now. And yeah, they're definitely like probably the richest family in Canada for sure. And then, of course, there's oil. Like, there's so much oil and, like, you know, things like that. Oh, yeah. There's definitely some billionaires here for sure.
It was extremely funny in terms of, like, you were talking about Canadian music scene. And my best friend's girlfriend, who's also my friend, there was like a TikTok thing that was like Canadian hit songs. And they were playing them. And it was like, who do you recognize these songs? She knew all 10 of them and was jazzed. And me and my friend were like, what? And then she was like, are you kidding me? This is the most famous song. We were like, and me and my friend were like, is this fake? Are you fucking with us? Like, is this, are these songs fake? And she was like, no. She was like, you don't know Crabs in a Bucket?
You don't know Crabs in a Bucket? Oh, that's a big one.
Absolutely not.
That
no.
did come over to the U.S.? Oh, that was a big one. My husband's met him, actually. Shoot, now I'm going to forget his name, but he was really big. Chaos. That's his name, Chaos. Oh, yes.
No.
That's a great song. That was huge for when it came out. It's still big when you hear it on the radio. You're like, oh, yeah, Crabs in the Bucket. It's a good one.
We thought that she was pranking us with like fake music. We were like, no, come on. And the people that are like famous Canadian actors, I always like, you know, like, oh, this show, that's like a huge show. Like, well, some of them come over, like Letterkenny.
Well, that's the thing. And, like, it's similar. Like, it's like you want to make it. You want to be a really big actor. You're going to have to move to L.A.
Yeah, it's so
but
funny.
There are certain Canadian actors that stay here. And oh my gosh, it's similar to like the UK. I watch a lot of British TV, and you can see all the actors hop to this show, to this show. You're like, yep. Oh, I remember them from the same thing with Canada. I'm like, that guy's Canadian. I know him because he's been in every fucking Canadian thing ever. This one. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I also watch a lot of British. I'm fascinated by people who are very famous in their country and then not famous in the US, like the UK tabloids. Like, I'm obsessed because it feels
crazy out there. The stuff they're allowed to somehow print, I'm like, is this not a fake thing? This is real? Like,
I know. I feel like it would be like reading like a Canadian tabloid. Like, I feel like it feels like a fake universe. Like, it feels like, and this is the very famous person. And I'm like, I believe you.
But I have no idea who you're talking about. Yeah.
I have no idea who you're talking about. Which is like, I find that so fascinating and wonderful because it just makes me remember that the U.S. is not the only place.
I know. And I mean, I get that too, because like people say that about people who live in Toronto, like every city or every province is like, oh, everyone in Toronto thinks they're the center of the universe. And it is sort of true. Once you get into the bubble, you're in the bubble, and like a lot of big things happen in Toronto, and there's a lot of people that come out of Toronto, and it's hard to not see there's a different perspective, there's a different, you know, world out there. But no, I get that. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, I mean, also too, like a very Canadian thing to do is to and there's so many like things and memes like this, but it's very popular to, like, if you know there's, oh, that guy's Canadian in that show, to say it. So like, and we're very proud of who, like, we have, like, we've got Simu Liu from Barbie, and you know, but he actually started out in a Canadian show called Kim's Convenience, and then he blew up because he did that you know, superhero movie, and we're like, oh my god, he's ours, he's Canadian.
Yeah. I do that with Jewish people all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a Jew. That's a Jew. Yeah. Or like, yeah, it's very, that makes total sense. I mean, I think also like I was really enjoying, because of the strike, I can't say exactly what it was, but there was like, they were showing a Australian soap opera that had both Margot Robbie and Chris Hemsworth in it.
Mm-hmm.
Or Liam Hemsworth, maybe.
That's like, that's their,
you can say it,
neighbors.
I can't. Oh, but okay. I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. And then that they're like, that's the, like, I watch, it'll be like a show where they'll be like, oh, this person is the daughter of X, Y, and Z actor from the UK, and I'm like, I don't even know who that is. They're like, that's a nepo baby. I'm like, to whomst?
To who? I mean, I'd probably know all those people. I know way more, I think, about like UK TV and movies than what's going on in Canada, which is weird. It's a weird obsession of mine. I love it.
I used to be. We could probably talk about this off air, but yeah, there's a lot of people that I'm like, you don't know that guy? That guy's so famous. Anyway, so I also wanted to talk about, so you have a wealth building blueprint for Canadians.
I do.
Like, what are some of the things in there, and how do you like make it specific to Canada?
Yeah. So, you know, I know it's kind of a joke now, but like every influencer has a course. But I was recognizing that a lot of my audience, honestly, I'd say probably 70 to 80% is Canadian. And even though like I have a variety of guests on my show, not just based in Canada, and I don't just talk about Canadian things, I think people do tend to like, okay, but when it gets to the nitty-gritty, like I want to learn how to invest for my retirement and I'm Canadian. If I take a US, you know, Americans course, they're probably not going to talk about some of the things that I need to know, such as like how to use my RRSP and the tax rules. rules and all that kind of stuff. And so I built a course specifically about, you know, first going on this one investment strategy called passive investing. So that's really using index funds. So it really teaches you how to just follow the passive investing strategy, but it is very specific to Canadians. And how I'm able to do that is, you know, for example, there's a part where I show you, okay, if you want to invest on your own, so not use an advisor, but, you know, do your own thing, you can use a robo-advisor. It's an online platform, or you could do it on your own, which is called self-directed investing. Mm-hmm. And I can not just talk to you about it, I can show you, because I can open up accounts with these platforms. I can make those trades. An American can't, because they can't legally open up an account here. And so I can do these kind of specific things where it's like, here's me buying a share of this Canadian stock. Here's me opening up an account with a Wealthsimple and showing you how to choose your portfolio and all that stuff. I can do that because I have the accessibility to do that.
Right.
And also just because of, you know, me also going the traditional route, becoming a CFP soon, I also have all of this, you know, education from the kind of financial industry. And so I can kind of talk to you as like, hey, I've been where you are, but also now I also know what they know. And now I can mm-hmm. translate it for you and break it down so it's understandable with a Canadian lens.
Do you have higher taxes on like millionaires and billionaires? Like, do you guys have the sort of thing that we're like striving
wealth,
for
like
here?
Like a specific wealth tax?
Yeah.
I'm probably going to get this wrong. I don't think so. We do have tax brackets, and we do in general have higher taxes than you guys do. Because I feel like I saw something online, someone complaining about their tax rate. I'm like, oh, that's not that high compared to what we're paying. I'm like, that's not a big deal to us. But
is that because you have healthcare?
Yeah, I think largely we have higher taxes because we have more programs, you know. So like, for example, where do our tax dollars go? Healthcare for sure. And I'm not to say that our healthcare system is perfect by any means. It's definitely a bit overcrowded and overstretched. And, you know, I mean, I've gone through 3 or 4 doctors in the last 3 years because they just leave. And sometimes it's leaving to another city or province. But sometimes these doctors are moving to the U.S. because they can make more money. And so,
wow,
yeah. It's not a perfect system. So I currently don't have a doctor, but that doesn't mean that I'm screwed. Like, there are clinics that are free. And if I have to go to the hospital, I can go there and also don't have to pay any money. So
that's
not, but again, not everything's covered as well. Like, eye care, you know, especially me being self-employed, if I wanted certain things covered and I don't have an employer, you know, health plan, mm-hmm. then I have to either pay out of pocket or find a private healthcare plan for that. And so, like, you know, eye care, dental care, that's not covered. Dental care is now covered for certain people under a certain income level. So that just was mm-hmm. introduced by the government. So that's good. But lots of things aren't covered. Prescriptions, not covered. So lots of things like that.
Interesting. So the view is that you guys have this amazing healthcare system because you don't go into debt by going to the hospital? Is that the big thing?
I think that's the big thing. Like, I see people post on like Instagram, especially like women, hey, I just gave birth and it cost $50,000. I'm like, uh-huh. I'm sorry, what? We don't mm-hmm. have that. We can go to the hospital, you know, get it done. Like, one like TMI example is I had to get my IUD in surgically, and I was terrified. I'm like, do I have to pay for this? They're like, no, you don't have to pay for this. And I'm like, good. Because it's like, they, you know, I had to get there. They had to like knock me out, do the surgery. Mm-hmm. Then I was in the hospital. Like, I was in there for maybe 6 or 8 hours, but then I didn't get a bill or anything. Like, that was covered. And that probably would have cost not that, you know, thousands of dollars. So there's good and bad, but it's not a perfect system by any means. No,
I don't know. I'm on a tip because of the strike, I'm going to lose my health insurance on September 30th.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're listening to this, it may have already happened. And I'm trying to figure out, going back on, you know, covered California or something like that, which is going to raise my payment by probably like $100, maybe more.
Yeah. And like, that's a big chunk of change. $100.
No, it's very bad.
You know,
it's extremely bad.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we say because of the strike, what we mean is because the studios are not giving people what they are worth. But it is also like, I'm like, okay, so a lot of stuff is happening all at once for me. And then I got it was almost like one of those things where I like got the letter in the mail that was like, you're losing your health insurance. And I was like, sure, obviously, of course. What? Like, yeah, definitely. There's 4 or 5 bad things happening. Let's add another one.
It always happens all at once. Yeah.
Oh, baby, let's add another one. Like that feeling you get where like so many bad things are happening that you're just like, yeah, add 5 more. What else could
Whatever,
happen?
I'm numb.
Exactly. This is not me asking the universe for more problems, by the way. But yeah, I was just like, sure, absolutely. So it's like, you know, you get this idea of, you really get to see like how precarious, like, okay, this was really tied to my employment. And now it's like, I don't know what's going to happen. And so it's, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think, I guess to close out, I wanted to ask, like, we see Canada as this sort of haven, but you've clearly talked about some stuff that is different. And so, like, if an American person was like, my financial situation here sucks, I'm going to move to Canada, what do you say to that?
Well, number one, grass is not always greener, right? Yeah. You know, there may be some things that you can get here that maybe are more difficult in the US. But also, I'd say probably in general, there's probably higher, depending on what you do, higher earning potential in the US, right? Mm-hmm. Like, depending on where you want to live. Like, the reasons that me and my husband moved to Toronto is, like, this is the place where we can make money. And we could not make this type of money if we stayed in Vancouver, which is, like, the second biggest city.
Right.
You know, and it's incredibly expensive to live here. Again, depends on where you live. But if you want to live in a major city, I mean, I think rent for maybe one bedroom, I could be getting this wrong, but Toronto, I don't know. I'd assume $2,500 to $3,000.
Wow.
Houses are $1 million and they're pieces of crap. You know, like,
oh,
it's like the cost of living here is outrageous. I think part of it is just because we are in a cost of living crisis, but it was expensive before the pandemic. And so there's pros and cons. I think just like anywhere, it's like you can't just move somewhere because you feel like, oh, it's cheaper here, because you have to move somewhere that you're actually going to really like. You want to make a community there, and, you know, you got to stick it out because it's not going to be easy. And, you know, otherwise we'd all just move to Portugal, because I feel like everyone's moving to Portugal.
I've heard that everyone's moving to Portugal. And then we got like a mailbag that was like, please don't move to Portugal, we're too full. Actually,
it's like, please stop using our resources. And, you know, yeah, it's one of those things that always kind of makes me feel so icky. It's like, I get it, people want to maybe retire or live someplace with a lower cost of living, but what are we, or is this just like kind of new colonialism a little bit? Like, are we, you know what I mean? Like, are we just white people coming over and just like taking advantage and making it more expensive to people that were living there for centuries? Yes.
Yeah, we love to do it.
We love to colonialize. We've learned nothing from history. So why not just keep it going?
It worked out well for white people. What do we care? We're like, yeah, do it again.
Oh gosh. I know, right?
I think that's going to be, yeah, I mean, it's going to be like heavy colonialism and gentrification. And I don't know. Yeah,
I know.
Mean, I'm not a politician, so I can't fix anything other than just to be like, guys, I don't know.
Don't think
think about it.
Yeah. Think about the impact you're going to have on that decision you're going to make. You know, it's complicated, man. I mean, that's the thing. It's money and just doing the right thing and trying to figure out how to make a living yourself where you are, or should you move somewhere? It is so nuanced and complicated. So I definitely don't have the right
and
tools
if Trump
for that, you know?
Wins again, I guess we're all coming to Canada.
I mean, at that point, I think let's just start over with America, maybe, you know, like, let's pick your favorite states and we'll just make a new one, you know?
My mom wants to do that. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you and more about you?
Thanks so much for having me. You can find me at jessicamorehouse.com. My podcast is called The More Money Podcast. And you can find me on Instagram at Jessica I. Morehouse.
It's just occurring to me that it's a pun. More money.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, fun, weird story of where that all started, because that sounds obvious now, but it wasn't really intentional, or it sort of was. But the original blog name I had back in 2011, it was a name that my roommate came up with because it was based off the song Mo Money Mo Problems. She's like, it should be Mo Money Mo Houses, you know, like your last name. Like, oh, that's funny. And then I shortened it to Mo Money. And then at a certain point, someone said, you were appropriating. And I'm like, fair enough.
Sure.
I should change it. So I changed it to More Money.
That's
but
really...
now I'm like, oh, that probably should have been the name the whole time.
Yeah, More Money. Yeah, More House. Well, that makes it seem like you're a real estate podcast, so maybe not.
So many people ask me that. I'm like, yeah, we need to change this name. So yeah, More Money. It's about like doing more, learning more, saving more, doing more with your money.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Bad with Money with Gabe Shane Dunn is a production of Noted Bisexual, produced by Melissa D. Montz and Diamond M. Print Productions, edited by Diane King, post-production sound by Coco Lorenz, and music by Mike Kaplan, Zach Sherwin, and Jack Dolgen, as sung by Sam Barbera. Thank you, love you, bye!
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tare, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.